And we're back. We return you now to Russia's Foreign Ministry's spokesperson, Maria Zakharova, at her Wednesday press conference.
Now we turn to other issues, other points on our agendas, and that is Afghanistan. With much concern, we've been seeing the development of events in the Ghazni province in Afghanistan. They have secured a major part of the Ghazni city. Hundreds of people died on both sides. Civilians have died too, unfortunately. A big part of the city had been devastated, demolished. The authorities saying that the Talibs are retreating from the city, but still they are holding the neighboring counties. We see that there is an increase in tensions in the northern provinces, including because of the attacks of the Talibs launched against the Afghan army base in the county of Gormaj, Faryab province. Last Sunday, at least 17 soldiers were killed and 20 were wounded in action, starting from the 2008. We've seen a number of hostilities in different parts of countries. Army and police having a hard time securing the control of the situation, but they cannot win. Even with the help of the international community's forces present in the country, partly because of the sorry state of the economy, and the World Bank has issued a report saying that there is a clear slowdown in economic growth, low rate of job creation. A lot of people live below the poverty line, up to 55% of the population. There are no prospects for any better. As for the territorial dispute regarding the Western Sahara, it is also a huge issue, and the former Spanish colony has been a point of much concern for decades. United Nations have been trying to settle this conflict between the Polisario Front and Morocco, but these summits and meetings have been torpedoed many times. There is a fragile status quo in place, but still, it is very concerning because there is much potential for further challenges to the regional security. We see that upon the personal instruction of the General Secretary of the United Nations, Mr. Köhler, former Germany's president, is working actively to ensure a direct dialogue without any precondition between the two parties, engaging Algerian and Mauritanian parties as observers. We see no alternative to finding a compromise basing on the resolution of the UN Security Council and UN General Assembly, following the procedures which comply in full with the UN Charter principles and objectives. We think that the lasting peace in West Sahara can be secured, but only through political means. We will continue keeping in contact with all the engaged parties, facilitating the positive development in this area.
Next to Salisbury and Amesbury. Of course, we are concerned by the lack of information about the condition of Yulia Skripal and her father, their whereabouts. And, of course, we are amazed that the British authorities continue to refuse to provide access for Russian consular officers to them. The United Kingdom continues to ignore demands by the Prosecutor General's Office of the Russian Federation sent to London on March 16th in connection with the criminal investigation regarding the attack on Yulia Skripal. This is the official charge. Politicians in the United States took advantage of the provocation staged with respect to Russian citizens in Salisbury, announcing new round of anti-Russian sanctions. We believe this step is politically biased and motivated. This is very much like the situation that took place a decade ago with the supposedly chemical weapons in Iraq, when the United Kingdom supported the United States without having any actual evidence. Instead, fabricated evidence was offered, fake evidence. So it seems like this time neither London nor Washington has learned the lesson of what happened with Iraq. But I can assure you that this time reputational losses will be much, much serious for these hasty actions, making the situation even worse. Investigation in Salisbury, Amesbury is conducted under heavy political pressure from the British government, which has, and actually the United States government as well. The British government gave the guilty verdict long time before the official investigation was concluded. In fact, we don't even know at this point when this investigation will be concluded. Anyway, the guilty verdict has been given already. And now that Washington has imposed new sanctions, this pressure is even stronger. Russia continues to insist on a transparent, objective, unbiased investigation of those incidents. We emphasize that it was Russian citizens who suffered in Salisbury, and we will not stay away from this matter. We demand access to our people. Staying on this subject, I would like to point out to you that there was an article that we saw. It was published in the Telegraph. It's an article by the U.S. ambassador to the United Kingdom, Wood Johnson. He encourages London to follow in the footsteps of Washington and withdraw from the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action on the Iranian nuclear program. So it seems like the U.S. ambassador just couldn't stay away from this subject. He had to get involved. So he talks about cyber attacks against Western democracies without offering any evidence. So he said that the U.K. should join the United States in its in its policy against the Iranian nuclear deal. He also says in the piece that the only reasonable plan of action is to tear up the deal with Iran, saying, and here is a direct quote, the U.S. and the U.K. together can secure peace and prosperity in Iran, something that the whole world is looking forward to. This is just absurd. The United States has been saying nobody should interfere in the internal affairs of other countries. This is something they have been talking about for a very long time. No interference in elections, no interference in internal affairs, respect the sovereignty of other countries. So here is the U.S. ambassador to the U.K. saying, and I quote, the U.S. and the U.K. together can secure peace and prosperity in Iran. In Iran, something that the whole world is looking for. So, somebody, the U.S. ambassador, thinks that Washington and London have the responsibility on securing peace and prosperity for Tehran. This is just absurd. And this is not it. Yet. We have repeatedly said that we are concerned by the decision of the United States to withdraw from the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action as a key element of the global non-proliferation regime and the cornerstone of security in the Middle East. This is our position, and the international community has supported this through the UN Security Council resolution, which has mandatory force. So we think this approach, as represented by the U.S. ambassador to the U.K. and other U.S. politicians, a mistake. We believe this is irresponsible, especially with regards to nuclear security. Comments by Wood Johnson are absolutely out of place and inappropriate. What the United States is doing is destabilizing the situation in Iran through illegitimate economic sanctions. And the most cynical thing about this is that they talk about peace and prosperity in the Middle East. The UK and the US doing that. Tell me, when was the last time that the US and the UK were able to secure peace and prosperity in the Middle East? Please tell me if there is a spot in the Middle East and in Northern Africa, an oasis, where this tandem succeeded in securing peace and prosperity. Maybe Libya, maybe Syria, maybe Yemen. What else? And the Arab Spring, the region barely escaped disastrous consequences that the Arab Spring could have had. So the track record, the recent history of the region, what the U.S. and the U.K. did there just tells us otherwise, tells us this won't work. So once again, I say that we shouldn't even take this seriously when he says the whole world's looking forward to. No, they're not authorized to secure peace and prosperity for other countries. Also, we had a few questions, a request to comment on the U.S. defense budget. We have already commented on this a little. Now I'd like to say a few words in more detail. The U.S. president signed the new bill on August 13th on defense spending for 2019, for the 2019 fiscal year, reinforcing Washington's dominant position in the international arena through a military build-up. Unprecedented pumping of the defense budget to $716 billion. This is a record in the last 15 years. This will have a devastating effect on the existing system of international security. And this budget allocates funds for some specific anti-Russian and anti-Chinese projects, as reflected in the National Security Strategy, National Defense Strategy, and the Nuclear Posture Review. This new bill, which is named after Senator McCain, the dyed-in-the-wool Russophobe, extends the ban on military cooperation with Russia, and this given serious challenges and threats that the world faces today. The bill approved $6.3 billion, which is $1.7 billion more than last year, for the European Deterrence Initiative, beefing up U.S. military presence in Europe in order to supposedly counter Russian aggression. There are other anti-Russian elements in the new bill. For example, the bill emphasizes that the U.S. may suspend its participation in the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty because allegedly Russia has broken the terms of this treaty. The U.S. plans to beef up the European segment of the U.S. global missile defense system to protect it from Russian missiles, which supposedly do not comply with the terms of the INF treaty. They refer to the fact that Russia allegedly violated the Treaty on Open Skies, and the bill blocks cooperation under this treaty as well. This will endanger not only U.S. crews, but also Russian representatives on board. Next, they reaffirmed their commitment to developing their global missile shield and deploying weapons in space. Other measures targeting Russia and other countries. There are plans to produce tactical nuclear weapons, or the so-called small-yield nuclear weapons, lowering the nuclear threshold, and also developing hypersonic weapons as part of the global strike. Also, there is a section talking about lethal weapons provided as aid to the Poroshenko regime in Ukraine, the country that is currently in a state of civil war, essentially. This certainly plays into the hands of the Ukrainian politicians who are not interested in resolving the Donbas conflict at an early date. For our part, we will take all necessary measures to provide for our security using all political and diplomatic and military means available to us. Also, we received a few questions about comments by some NATO members and their reaction on the their reaction to the U.S. increasing its defense spending. The NATO summit, which took place in July, reaffirmed the commitment of the NATO member states to spend 2% of their GDP on defense. And this despite the fact that the defense budget of NATO exceeds the Russian defense budget by the factor of 14. And some countries even proposed raising this number to 4%. And of course, not all countries are happy with that, especially considered the trade wars happening today, with some countries this shift will leave them with more guns than peaceful civilian products, especially when you consider that Russia does not pose a threat to NATO member states, and there are no threats in Europe that would require military response. At the same time, there are a few countries that tried protecting their national interests. On the other hand, there are countries that look pretty much like they're fighting windmills. Non-existing threats. They just and their real goals, scoring some political points or actually making money. We don't know what their real purpose is, but this will not certainly not strengthen security in Europe. On the contrary, it will only create additional risks.
Also, many mass media outlets, experts, and just laying public have been asking about the Russian-Greek relations and the situation surrounding what is happening. We've been seeing a lot of articles dedicated to that issue, a lot of fake news also, which resonate through the media space. So I would like to dwell on this issue right now. We've familiarized ourselves with the Foreign Ministry of Greece commentary dated the 10th of August this year regarding the current state of affairs in the relation between Russia and Greece. We see that some partners are trying to degrade the level of our relations. Russia has been treating this relation with Greece as traditionally friendly, and now these relations are being called by some as just routine coexistence. This does not meet the interests of the two people and our respect. We have an unprecedented level of political dialogue at the highest levels, and the major projects we've been implementing together lately. It has been a paragon for our European partners, because these relations with Greece have been friendly, open, and contentful. Unfortunately, that cooperation is degrading, and this year we celebrate the 119th anniversary of establishing diplomatic relations, which is lamentable. It is lamentable to see such a degradation. We've been respecting the independence of Greece and its sovereignty, contributing to it back in the history, as well as it was the case with Byzantium. We never interfered in the domestic affairs of Greece or its internal policies. If they want to say it has been like that, it means that those people are not friends of Russia and Greece. The charges pressed by Athens are unfounded. No evidence has been presented to us. Local media have been developing a discreditation campaign against our bilateral ties in the field of cultural and humanitarian cooperation. And unyielding positive vibes have been turning into something else. No one ever doubted the high quality of our relations. Though they were an example to others, no one ever considered decreasing their importance, but now it looks like a hybrid warfare. It is highly suspicious and evil-minded attempt. We see that many now try to also defame the pillars of our relations, which is one and the same religion, our historical friendship, contribution of our societies and people-to-people relations. Russia has been reprimanded and rebuked for unfounded infringement upon the interests of Greece in the Balkans, and allegedly undermining the Prespan agreement on Macedonia, the name of Macedonia. We've seen a lot of articles which were paid for sure, that Moscow is allegedly financing many thousand people's strong rallies before the international exhibition in Salonikas. This is simply ridiculous. It is a huge media campaign orchestrated by someone. We are not building friendship with someone against someone else. Never, ever. And some try to convince the world that we do exactly that. For instance, our cooperation with Turkey is not directed against any third country. No one should twist the history and twist the minds of people. Let's take the example of the Imperial Orthodox Palestine Society, which, just as many other non-government organizations, conduct the projects for the betterment of a cultural and educational cooperation. And they do that only when their partners are willing to cooperate. And that organization is being criticized right now, too. It is not Russia who has initiated these steps undermining the quality of our relations. Quite on the contrary, we adhere to the multilateral cooperation with Greece. This situation is abnormal, and we hope it is temporal, and we do hope that we'll overcome it soon. We are ready to exercise patience in order to fully return to the good neighborly level of relations between the states and between the people. We also received much information about Kyiv preparing to create their own Magnitsky Act. Well, at least it will be resembling it in terms of its contents. So they're trying to impose unilateral coercive measures, undermining the international law and just practice of normal civilized behavior of states. It seems that they're following the disruptive influence of the West, this way trying to accuse nationals of other states basing on unsupported evidence and unfounded charges. So, you know, they're acting ruthlessly, trying to collectively punish those who are guilty of nothing. Inclusion of any politicians in that list, we will be treating it as a violation of international law and law on the immunity of the officials of sovereign states. We believe that this initiative, quote-unquote, is an attempt to further promote impunity, sweeping under the carpet the neo-Nazi and extremist actions in such places as the Odessa Trade Union House, Southeast Ukraine, and Independence Square of Kyiv. Then we turn to the discrimination against Russian-speaking population in the Baltic states. It's almost a routine now, because we almost every day monitor what is happening in that on that track. And it is highly problematic, because currently we see the squeezing of Russian language away from the public domain. For instance, in Latvia, the government trying to put the education onto the tracks of teaching everything only in the Latvian language, derailing Russian language education. They are doing that for colleges, for schools, for universities, effectively banning Russian language. This is a discrimination, and we condemn it resolutely. And we have many times said that we do not approve of these actions. We all remember what people in Latvia say. They are against it too. Fortunately, that example of Latvia is somewhat contagious, and Lithuania now also follows suit. A group of conservatives have introduced the same of Republic of Lithuania group of amendments planning to increase the percentage of the Lithuanian language teaching in education up to the 60%, which is undermining the rights of the Russian-speaking population. They say they try to level the opportunities of students, but this is hypocritical, this is indirect discrimination in broad daylight. They try to forcefully assimilate Russian-speaking people. Polish Russian-speaking minorities are resolutely against it. That bill proposed by the conservatives is certainly a devolution of the state policies and undermines the situation regarding the rights of the minorities. It is a clear infringement upon their rights. We sincerely hope that Lithuanian authorities will refrain from acting in such an unpopular way. We also have been hearing a lot about the so-called preventive conversations with senior school students of Russian-speaking schools of Vilnius and other towns. During these conversations, the officials started to probe into the level of loyalty of these students towards Lithuanian state and policies. They tried to scan them for notebooks published in Russian other banned literature, they say. It is Europe, it is 2018. Can you imagine? Also, they've been conducting those inquiries and scanning in other places of Latvia and Estonia. Estonia, for instance, they have been considering a law to increase tenfold the fines for legal entities whose employees do not have the necessary command of Estonian. The current fine is 600 euros, and they plan to increase it up to 6,400 euros. So, this is for those who do not know Estonian enough. Can you imagine this? I have a question. Estonian authorities, when they are considering these initiatives, don't they realize that somewhere in the world something may happen to the people who been traditionally speaking Estonian, for instance, who do not know the language of their country of residence? Again, this is abnormal. We call upon the United Nations, OIC, Council of Europe, and European Union to have weighty say and vocally stand against these practices. This is a direct discrimination against the national minorities, discrimination against their languages and their educational rights. Today, we are here on the Baltics at the AirTech camp, but we have some news from the Crimean AirTech camp. As you all remember, 1 month ago, a unique mission to rescue the young footballists has been successfully conducted. They spent a lot of time in a flooded cave. We've been following the news. We suggested that we could possibly send our help and our specialists. Many people been standing together with those who were trapped in that cave. We all saw our hearts conquered by the efforts of the rescuers. And these children who were fighting for their survival, they came through a lot of trouble and hardship. It wasn't a game. That was a real-life situation. We can only imagine how hard it was for them. So to help them come back to normal life and to honor their strong characters and their courage, resilience amid such dire conditions, the director of the AirTech camp is now invites those boys to come to the AirTech camp. To join other children from many countries of the world, spending their time together, going on adventures, making friends, complementing their studies with real-life training and people-to-people relations building. I would like to send this message on behalf of the director of the AirTech camp, because that heroic feat, and it's truly a feat, I think, it's similar to what adults do. We do appreciate what they did. We believe that the atmosphere in AirTech will help them forget the bad memories. Not like something which was too bad to remember, but to forget how difficult it was to survive those days. AirTech, that camp, has one of the best football teams who currently lead in the Crimean Cup. So probably for them it will also be an opportunity to play football. And we all know that they are footballers. Everyone willing to come will be giving this opportunity absolutely for free, based on the quotas the AirTech camp has for foreign children coming to it. Relevant bodies of the Russian Federation will contact them, officially sending this invitation and arranging the details. And I'm ready to take up your questions if you have any. Yes, please. Please don't forget to use your mics. What's your take on what the United States do? And I mean the Treaty on Open Skies, because they are banned from flying over the Chechen Republic, Kaliningrad, and some other parts. So how can you comment on that? Well, everything which have to do with the statements of the United States regarding the Open Skies Treaty has been conducted by Mr. Ryabkov, Deputy Foreign Minister of the Russian Federation. The thing is that if they have any claims, or if they feel that they see their rights infringed, or that the treaty is not being implemented in full, then, as the international affairs stand, they can address international institutions bilaterally, multilaterally. They can engage the diplomatic channels or the channels between the relevant bodies and the ministers. For instance, we used to have commissions on different tracks, culture, armaments, mass media commissions, but they put all those on hold. But we still have institutions in the world which can help us discuss these issues, but their goal seems to be quite different. They do not want to solve these problems, to allay those concerns. They want to deepen them, and they use the information space to exaggerate this. These problems, they exaggerate it. Otherwise, they would give us the real statement officially asking us to explain ourselves. So this is an information campaign they conduct now against Russia. So that's how we see it. There is a lot of opportunities to solve these issues in a business-like manner. For instance, the meeting of our presidents proved to the whole world that both Russia and the United States can sit at a table for negotiations and talk business. And no one ever doubted that. They spent a lot of time to prepare for that meeting. Our foreign ministers worked hard to arrange the plan of action on the Iranian nuclear program and other questions such as Syria and Ukraine. We have the dialogue. Now we have quite a difficult situation, that's true, but no one doubts that this can be settled. But some people don't want to use the channels to solve the problems. We have well-established channels which should be engaged, and they are not engaged. People just come up to the mic and start to say things.
Zvezda Television, I would like to clarify something on the U.S. defense budget, cutting military cooperation program, and one question about sanctions, if I may. Trade war between Turkey and the United States. Could you please comment on that? Well, generally speaking, I mentioned the Open Skies program and the defense budget. For more detail, please talk to the defense ministry. And as to the outcome, this is what makes this whole situation so ironic. For many years, they've been telling us that everything they do with respect to Russia, sanctions, stop lists, restrictions, these are all punishments. This is their response. They've assumed the role of the arbiter, global arbiter, and they want to punish Russia for doing the wrong thing, for misbehaving. And we've been saying that this actually started long time before Ukraine, and this started with Obama. This was long time. The Magnitsky Act. This was long time before Ukraine, and now it's clear to everybody. That Russia is certainly not the only country on those lists. We see trade wars with China. We see pressure, financial, economic, all sorts of pressure put on Turkey. Iran is also under pressure. More and more sanctions are imposed on Iran, economic policies and tremendous political pressure. Remember, they used to talk about the axis of evil. There are certain nations, certain countries that somehow, because of their history, just cannot be good. Those are rogue nations. They are the axis of evil. So today, in order to pursue your own interests, You don't even have to belong to this axis of evil. For example, the European Union, what they do with the European countries. These are certainly trade wars. It's just a matter of taste. If you want, you may call this trade wars or pressure or sanctions, whatever. You name it. But even closest allies of the United States, for example, Canada. Canada always supported the United States, endorsed everything the U.S. did, following in its footsteps. And now even Canada is affected by certain decisions made by the United States. See, the problem is, when the U.S. pursues this policy, they care about their national interest or not. More likely, they just pursue the interests of a small group of people that are currently in power. Once every 4 or 8 years, the interests which Washington describes as the U.S. national interests turns around, and a completely different thing are now described as national interests. Just a few years ago, they sought to strengthen trade and partnership with those countries, and now they turn everything around, and now they say Iran is an aggressor, and so on and so forth. So I think it's really important for us to understand how these things work. Okay, there is the trade war with Turkey. How can Russia benefit from this situation? Well, first of all, this is a very good question. It's not Russia who designed the globalization concept. This is something that came from the West, and everybody fell in love with globalization. And everybody got involved in this global economic process. We see the world as a community where every country can make a contribution, and countries can all work together and have access, equal access to economic activities. But this is not what we see happening today. As regards Russia, we'll look at the specific results that come out of these trade wars. We've made our choice. After sanctions were imposed on Russia, we took advantage of the situation, faced with this reality, faced with these circumstances, we made our choice, and this enabled our country to develop, follow its own path, develop internally. And going forward, we'll monitor the situation, minimize our losses, and of course, it's not like we are happy that the U.S. is now attacking Turkey. No, this is not how we are. No, the world is global, and when sanctions are imposed on a certain country, this you can always be hit by the recoil. We certainly don't support any such steps. We just comment on those. We really do hope that this this won't continue, but at this point it doesn't seem likely.
Good day, Ruski Zapad outlet. My question has to do with the movement across the border of Poland and the Kaliningrad region. So what do your Polish colleagues say regarding this regime on the travel between the two sides of the border? Well, I don't have anything to give you, no details, but maybe tomorrow. I think tomorrow I will be ready to comment on that. Maybe today, but later on in the day. Ms. Harrow, my question has to do with Syria. The United Nations say that they are against refugees coming back to Syria. Why don't they want to agree with the normalization of the situation in Syria?
Well, I cannot agree with you, with the statement that the United Nations are negative when it comes to the return of the refugees. I talked about that today. Their approach is quite different. They say that there are no suitable environment and atmosphere created for the return of refugees. They see some obstacles on that track, and the ongoing military hostilities, major devastation, general lack of security, and very debile infrastructure, as well as a lot of unexploded ammunition. So who is going to reinforce the situation? Who is going to improve the infrastructure? Who is going to help Syrians demine the territory? Russia does that, but Syrians themselves should be doing that. Don't you think so? And this is exactly what we would like to say. United Nations has been influenced by major global actors, donors of many humanitarian programs, such as the United States and other Western states, and they've been trying to change the regime in Syria for quite a long time, and you're all familiar with that. That is why they are putting forward certain preconditions when it comes to the help delivered to Syria, and they try to tie it up with a political transition, as they call it, which effectively means Assad leaving his position. And we see unilateral sanctions they impose towards Syria to achieve these goals, and this is a paradox. This is a war-torn country, and they are putting it further on the knees, throwing more and more stones at it in the form of sanctions. Yes, this massively impedes the reconstruction. Major donors are having quite a harsh stance in Syria, and that is why many UN agencies cannot join their efforts with us and others to help Syria reconstruct the country. United Nations Refugee Agency thinks that there is a number of conditions to be met for the refugees to come back. They have some political preconditions too. That is why it is hardly possible to say that the UN Refugee Agency will be participating in the return of refugees. Unfortunately, that is the case, but it does not mean that the United Nations are against any steps to normalize the situation in Syria. And we've been keeping constant dialogue with interested parties. We engaged in many talks and meetings. Mr. Lavrov had a telephone conversation with the General Secretary of the United Nations quite recently, and we work with other agencies to facilitate the comeback of refugees from the neighboring and other countries. We solved many humanitarian issues at this point, working very hard. Vesti Kaliningrad, in your preliminary remarks, you talked about the e-visas, saying that there will be details available later on the website. So maybe you have any details now. What about Western states being on the list? Well, this information needs to be harmonized by several departments, so we will be posting that later on the website. We still need to finalize this question. I alone cannot announce it without having every other department agree on the final statement. Then we'll post it. Mr. Hebram, my name is Andrei Vipelzev. This is Newsbolt outlet. So what are your position on the possible ways to oppose the vandalism in Poland and what they do with Russia-related memorials? Maybe there can be created a digital map with all the memorials and plates and monuments which has been demolished or will be demolished soon, long forgotten and the still existent ones. That can be supplied with photos and videos, photos of, well, soldiers who perished there, their biographies. It would be a huge multimedia project available in three languages, Russian, Polish, English. Will that project help to preserve the monuments from being erased from the memory of people?
I'm not sure about mobile devices, if this can affect the position of the Polish authorities. I fully support your idea. I think there are people working on it already, and we are doing everything we can to help create such a database or a virtual map of military monuments in Poland. Maybe actually we can go beyond Poland and Europe in general, but of course, especially Poland, because of the fierce battles that were fought there during the liberation process. And today we talked to participants of the Baltic Artek summer camp, and young people came up with similar ideas. I think we should certainly do that, and not just at the government level, but also working with NGOs, with civil society. This should be a grassroots movement, and we will provide our support. For example, our department, the Department of Information and Media, initiated a special agreement between the Military History Society of Russia and our department, working together to prevent vandalization of military monuments and supporting the healthy forces in society that want to preserve military monuments. So we have this agreement with the Society of Military History. Specifically, what can we do? If you have been following this subject, I talk about this almost every week. Our embassies are in contact with the local authorities. They protest, they raise this issue in talks regularly. And we hope that by raising this issue with certain European capitals, when they ask how can we prevent people from vandalizing monuments, we often tell them, and we hope that they would eventually listen. Given the current level of technological progress, you can install CCTV cameras at least. This is what they do in other places, so you will be able to investigate those attacks. So if a person wants to vandalize a monument, they will think twice before doing something like that, because they will be caught on camera, and police will be able to investigate the incident. There are CCTV cameras in the cities everywhere, so it will be easier to find those people. Yes, there are incidents when monuments are vandalized. Of course, we always work with local civil societies. With there are people in Poland, for example, who raise funds. We support them. We help. We work with this person in Poland. It's not just, it's not like we are using software or anything like that. No, we just want to have somebody working locally in Poland and monuments to Soviet soldiers who gave their lives to save the lives of other people. And we want to see this work continue, what this person does and those who help him. We want this, we want to help them in their work. Yes, we do want to have all those websites, something that we really need to do. Do we have any other questions? If no, yeah, okay, I'll take the last question because I was getting ready to leave. When talking to young people, is this your first time in Kaliningrad, actually? No, this is not my first time. I've been here a couple of times in recent years together with the foreign minister when he was meeting his counterparts, but I was here as a little girl during the Soviet period. I think this was in the late 80s. And I remember this very vividly. This was some family time. Dad driving car, and my mom and I, we came all the way from Moscow to Kaliningrad to this very place for some recreation, and then we drove back to Moscow. So I remember well how it used to look, and I'm really impressed with the changes. And my childhood memories, even though they're very sweet, nature and everything, but infrastructure-wise, progress is obvious, of course. The situation has improved dramatically, so maybe I will travel using the same route and come here some other time. Well, if you let me go right now, I will have some time to visit the Museum of Amber. Thank you very much. Bye-bye and see you. Thank you.